Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We'll fight to the death. We are soldiers. We are soldiers.
Coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. Also check out the Bard's Logic Political Talk website by going to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com and check out all the different pages, including our Give page, which has a wonderful organizations and charities that you could give to. I'm sure they will appreciate whatever support that you could give. And also our affiliate page, where you can check out our affiliates and sponsors, such as the Go Sun Stove, which is a solar oven, which you can, with just using the power of the sun, cook food in about 20 minutes, depending on what you're cooking. And it's very portable, so we could go anywhere with you without having to bring fuel with you as well. So if you're camping or hiking or picnicking or on the beach or down in Washington, D.C. for the Operation American Spring, bring a Go Sun stove so you can make yourself a hot meal on the go. So tonight is a special Friday night session here on Bard's Logic Political Talk. So join me, the host, and we'll also hopefully hear from our activist, conservative activist, Cindy Todd, and also we're excited to hear from the Overpasses for America, along with our along with our constitutional scholar, Kelly Mordecai, and, of course, our contributor, Dan Gray, the columnist, former columnist of the Washington Times and editor of or for the Operation American Spring. So call in at 347-945-7428 and join our roundtable discussion. Now, as everyone here knows who's a listener on the show, at least who's listened for a while, but I am a Newt Gingrich fan, and we'll have a little audio clip from him later. But Newt Gingrich points out the three national security issues, the bird dog issue that we just are going to be covering mainly tonight, or bird dog, and the trading for the five terrorists, also Benghazi and Boko Haram. Now, these issues illustrate the dangers of Obama as America's commander-in-chief and chief diplomat. But, of course, tonight we'll also talk about, do these issues also point out to something deeper? And that's perhaps the reasoning behind Obama's foreign policy, at least when it comes to the war on terror. And do these three issues point out, what we'll explore tonight, Obama's Islamic sympathies? Hear from Obama saying, the future must not belong to those who slander the prophet of Islam. And he also has been quoted saying, throughout history, Islam has demonstrated through words and deeds the possibility of religious tolerance and racial equality. And also, that experience guides my conviction that partnership between America and Islam must be based on what Islam is, not what it isn't. And I consider it part of my responsibility as President of the United States to fight against negative stereotypes of Islam wherever they appear. So does Benghazi, Boko Haram, and the bird dog trade put or prove Obama's sympathies to radical Islamists, or only show his weakness as our commander-in-chief and chief diplomat? So come and join us and listen to the show and call us to tell us what you think about this issue and whether or not the actions taken by Obama in informing Congress should also bring him closer to what many would like to see for impeachment. And so first we will start off with our contributor Dan Gray, and we also have James on the line as well, and so we'll put him in order of them being on hold, and I also see Kelly on the line and also some other callers. So if you'd like to chime in, just push the 1 on your number dial after giving us a call at 347-945-7428. So without any further ado, I will bring on Dan. Thank you very much, Dan, for calling to the show. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Listen, before we go any further, technical issue. I've got a big fan going up here in my attic office. You can call it an office. It's really an attic. Are you getting any kind of noise, or can you hear me clearly?
I can hear you clearly.
Oh, good. This is an excellent microphone, then. Listen, thank you very much for having this special program tonight, because I don't see anybody else covering this issue on the Patriot side anywhere. I see a lot of interesting small stories, but the overview is required. And you started it off just right by quoting our dear leader himself. And that quote about Islam being slandered, I believe he said that at the United Nations. Look, I'm not going to get into whether Islam is a good religion or a bad religion, because I don't think that religion is the issue. Our First Amendment guarantees that people have the right to worship or not as they see fit. And I do know some people who are Muslim and Jews and Christians of various denominations and atheists, and some of them are very good people who don't harm others and who work to promote decency and goodness. And some who call themselves those things are exactly the opposite. But Islam as a world religion right now is in a place that Christianity was, that Judaism was, that many other religions were, and it's a bad place. Christianity used to wipe people out. There used to be an Inquisition, and they would torture people and kill them because they didn't necessarily believe exactly what was required, or because somebody wanted something that they had and decided that would be a useful ploy to get that something. In other words, abuse of power. And we see this, of course, and we complain about this every week in government, but it also exists in religion. Judaism, and I'm a Jew, but the Orthodox establishment of Judaism at the time of Jesus collaborated with the Roman authorities to get rid of a troublemaker who was the greatest moral teacher the world has ever seen. And I'm not a Jew for Jesus or a messianic guy. I'm a Jew. And I can say that without saying that Jews are to blame. I'm not saying that all Muslims are to blame. But that religion right now is not a religion of peace. It is a religion of death. If you are an infidel, if you're a non-Muslim in an Islamic-controlled country, if you're not dead, you are a second-class citizen. And this is in the Quran, but more than that, because some people who defend Islam will point to things in the Bible, especially the Old Testament, about savagery, you know, Joshua wiping out everybody in Jericho, including women and children. I get that. That's not today. But today, in Islamic countries, Christians and Jews are treated as second-class citizens or killed. Look at what's happening to the few Christians who are left in Iran. Look at what's happening to the masses, the millions of Coptic Christians in Egypt. And if you're an apostate to any of the other religions, like Judaism or Christianity, if you decide you want to leave a particular religion or a particular sect of that religion, you leave it. And maybe you start another one or join with another one. And nobody really has a problem with that, except possibly on a personal note if they know you. But if you leave Islam to become a Jew or to become a Christian, you're dead, literally dead. They will officially sentence you to death and kill you in these countries. Now, the list of things that Obama has done compared to what he says are so voluminous that I don't think 3 hours would even do it, and I know I'm not the only guy who's going to be talking tonight. But as it says in the Bible, in the New Testament, by their fruits shall ye know them. You have to ask yourself, folks, is President Obama and his administration promoting traditional Judeo-Christian values? I'm not talking religion here. I'm talking the values of a society that you don't have to be Christian to buy into: hard work, individuality, personal responsibility, respect for others. Or is he practicing and preaching something different? The fellow grew up, he's my age, he grew up in Indonesia as a adopted son of a man named Sotoero, and that's an Indonesian Muslim country. He went to an Indonesian Muslim school. That's what he learned. Reverend Wright's church, which does not preach any version of Christianity, what they call liberation theology, if you look at it, has nothing to do with traditional Judeo-Christian values. We all saw him bow to the Saudi king. Presidents in this country don't bow to anyone. The very first thing he did, before he did anything else when he took office, was to send a message of support to the Palestinian Authority. Before he went and visited Israel several years later, before he went and visited England, who he rudely returned Churchill's bust from, before he visited Australia, before he visited Canada, any of our real allies who proved it over the years, he went to Cairo and gave a speech in a mosque saying how great Islam was and how the Muezzin's call to prayer, that high-pitched, wailing, poetry. It is beautiful, but it was the most beautiful thing he'd ever heard in his life. He said that.
Right.
And I think he did mean it that time. Now, just to a couple of things and turn it back, because we've got so many things to cover, I just want to run down a few of the things that the man has done. In Iraq, he threw them into chaos. First, he didn't want to go for a surge, and then when he was a senator, and then when it was successful, he withdrew far too quickly and has thrown them into chaos. In Egypt, he went against a dictator who at least kept stability and was not an enemy to the United States or the world, in favor of the Muslim Brotherhood, who have now been repudiated and thrown out not just by the military there, but by their own people. They're murderers. Speaking of Muslim Brotherhood, Hillary Clinton, who was the Secretary of State, the first Secretary of State under President Obama, her body woman, her main aide, the wife of Senator, well, we won't go into his nickname is, but the fellow who likes to tweet pictures of his tweet, her name is Huma Abedin, or Huma Wiener, and she has, it's amazing, she is cleared at the highest levels, completely vetted, absolutely not a security risk, but every single member of her family, including her parents, her uncles, her cousins, they're all dyed-in-the-wool, top-level operatives of the Muslim Brotherhood. Not her, though. Of course not. Valerie Jarrett, who is possibly the real president, I'm not sure, but it seems like nothing happens without her say-so, and if she says so, it happens. Folks, I'm not even going to go into this one. Look up her background. Who is she? Who is her family? It's not what it looks like, and Jarrett's not her name. And this is no conspiracy stuff. Look it up. You'll find it on mainstream sites. A few of them managed to cover it. Look at Benghazi when he destabilized, again, a dictator who was so scared after George Bush invaded Iraq that he willingly gave up his chemical, his biological and his weapons and his nuclear program, just said, here, take them, don't invade me. This guy was not a good guy. Gaddafi was not a good guy. But instead we got chaos, and now we have Benghazi, which looks very much like an illegal CIA operation to gather up heavy weapons and put them on ships, Turks that went to Syria in their civil war to fight not for the Alawites, not for the Christians, not for the moderates, not for any of the people over there who may or may not be our best friends but who aren't our enemies, but no, to give it to Al-Qaeda. He wants to disarm me. I can't own a weapon. I'm an American citizen. I'm a dangerous terrorist, according to him. But he's giving full automatic weapons, anti-tank weapons, anti-aircraft weapons to Al-Qaeda. And we all know how much of a friend they are. Then we have Boko Haram, who kidnapped those poor girls in Nigeria, who cut the arms and legs off of Christians, who burned Christians in their churches. And for years, Obama's administration absolutely refused to consider Boko Haram a terrorist group. If it wasn't for the fact that they finally went too far in the eyes of the American public and no one could ignore them, kidnapping little girls, little children, who have been forced, some of them, into slavery, and some of them forced into God knows what those poor children are going through, because we know how much Islam, at least unreformed Islam in its present state, respects women and children, especially girl children. And then that brings us up to Bergdahl, where this man, on his own, with his authority of a pen and a sword, this Nixon with a tan, this impeachable fraud, has decided that he's going to disobey the very law, the federal law that he signed into law, passed by the Congress and the Senate, that says that he must give notification if he's going to do anything with those people in Guantanamo. No, he decides on his own he's going to do it and give just a little bit of notice to Harry Reid ahead of time. I don't know how many hours it was or how many minutes. And instead of trading this one guy, this mm-hmm. infidel, this American Taliban, this guy who, and it's not swift boating, his very own troops, the guys who fought side with him, shoulder to shoulder, lived in the trenches with him, shared their food. These guys say that he is a deserter in the face of the enemy at time of war. And he chose to get this guy back. And the way the price he paid was not some low-level guy, because Bergdahl is a low-level guy. He was a sergeant. He's not a big deal. He's not a strategist. He's not a bomb maker. He's not an amazing Mullah Omar guy. Give props where they're due. The guy's an amazing fighter and an amazing organizer. Osama bin Laden was an astounding organizer. It's too bad he was on the side of evil. But he trains this one guy, for the five worst killers of Americans that we hold in custody. The five worst murderers of Americans. So that's where we find ourselves today. And I'm actually grateful, again, to President Obama, that in order to take the heat off of him because of the way he was treating veterans in the Veterans Administration scandal that he knew about this whole time, in order to take the heat off, the guy decides to pull another fast one and divert our attention with something, but he diverts our attention with something worse. Every time he tries this tactic, it rebounds badly on him because the original problem, Benghazi, he tried that with Benghazi by releasing information on the IRS scandal. The result, the IRS scandal is still there and Benghazi's still there. So he's not doing himself any favors, and I, for one, am really glad about that. And I need to take a breath.
Well, at that point, we'll go ahead and bring in James. James, thank you very much for calling to the show. How you been?
Oh, I've been all right. Been very busy, very, very busy. Finished
James,
up my work.
James, I hear you.
Go ahead.
I was going to mention, James, you got injured really badly. I met you in Washington, and you were really hurting bad. A, how you doing physically, and B, I heard you had some good news.
Yeah, it took me a week to recover from that trip to D.C. It was, I didn't realize just how much all that marching around was going to tear me up. My feet were swollen up like small watermelons for the better part of a week before they even started going down. The bus ride back was horrible because I couldn't elevate my feet or anything. I was on that thing for 40 hours, and it was wow. I mean, of course, the usual curious odors and whatnot you get on the bus. It wasn't the most pleasant time, but. Nevertheless, it was entertaining. I got to see some parts of the country I'd never seen before, and so there were some good things to that. I can't complain. I can't blame Greyhound. It wasn't anything that was their fault. But they actually have some new buses. Some of their newer buses are built by Prevost, which if you've ever seen those great big personal buses that people drive around, those luxury buses. Well, they build a pretty quality machine. So if you're thinking about riding with them. You might take something to cancel out the curious odors. But other than that, they're better than they used to be.
And I hear that your good news means, bottom line, that you're going to be able to continue and expand your efforts with overpasses and the other Patriot activities you do because you managed to get a little bit of fairness, finally, from the system. And, you've got some bills paid.
Well, not yet. It takes up to it'll be like 19 more days at the most before I get the settlement money. I mean, it wasn't a huge amount. It wasn't even six figures. So anybody that thinks I'm getting rich, no, it doesn't work that way in Oklahoma. They have a formula, and it's a pretty Spartan formula as far as what most people might think that you would get from a workers' comp settlement. But it'll help me get a few things taken care of where, in the long run, my cost of living will go down quite a bit, and I won't have to worry about some things. And so that's a comfort in and of itself. I had to, of course, sell my motorcycle because of the injury. I couldn't ride it anymore, so I took the money from that and bought myself another toy. if I can't have fun on a motorcycle, I went and, you know, I had a Honda Shadow, and I sold it and went and bought a Honda Prelude car, and it's a, you know, it needs a little bit of TLC, but it's a snappy looking car and it drives well, and that's the important thing in the long run. Of course, you know, with the mess that I'd had with workers' comp, my brand new car was repossessed, and so I was without a vehicle at all for over a month, and that's never any fun. But I've got that taken care of now, so you know things are looking up. And you know, if I spend the money wisely, I should be able to be, you know, in a pretty good position in life as far as expenses and things like that go for, you know, for a pretty good duration of time.
And what is your take on this whole Bergdahl situation, et cetera?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. And I made a meme about it that I'll be posting up on Facebook here. Well, not tomorrow. I've got tomorrow already scheduled, but the next day. This is the second time, actually, that the Obama administration has dealt with the Taliban with disastrous results. And the other was Extortion 17. Leon Panetta and Joe Biden released the identities of SEAL Team 6, which allowed them to track them, which resulted in the downing of SEAL Team 6. And we lost three U.S. service members there. And now he trades, you know, the Girl Scout-level version of the Taliban for the Special Forces version of the Taliban. And now we've got six Taliban running on the loose, one here in America and five headed back to Afghanistan, where they can, you know, wreak havoc on who knows how many people's lives. And make no mistake, Bergdahl left to join the Taliban. He was not a captive. At no point was he a captive. Did he lose weight? Well, sure, when you live out in the field, and you're living off of field rations and things like that, like they do, you're going to lose weight. And, so anybody that thinks that this guy was a POW is sadly misinformed or intentionally denying the reality of it. Everybody that served with him before he became a deserter and joined the Taliban, that went searching for him, says that, you know, every person they came across during the search, said, you know, that had seen him, said that he went looking for the Taliban to join the Taliban. And so we traded one Taliban that we brought back here. That's as far as a threat level, is a cupcake. And we set five killers loose on the people of Afghanistan, and that's just simply unconscionable on a moral level. And it definitely, you know, when you throw in the things that Obama said regarding Islam, and then his administration's actions with the Taliban, it appears that he's in some sort of collusion with the Taliban. And we, you know, the fact that, you know, and it, you know, and then Lindsey Graham, which I guess for Lindsey Graham, it's just kind of like a liberal Alex Anonymous. You know, he took his first step by saying that if Obama does anything else, he'll call for impeachment. So, you know, he's taken a step forward, but he still hasn't admitted that he's addicted to liberal politics.
So, in other words, if you're blinded in one eye by somebody poking you with a sharp stick, you got to wait till you're blind. It's interesting you mentioned SEAL Team 6 and Extortion 17. Just a small note for those of you on the East Coast, tomorrow morning in Philadelphia down by the stadiums, Sons of Liberty Riders, which is a group I'm affiliated with, is going to have a ride to raise money in support of the Michael Strange Foundation. Michael Strange was the leader of SEAL Team 6, and was murdered, in my opinion, by our own people with the collusion of the Taliban. And the truth will come out on this. We're working on getting Charlie Strange, who is Michael's father, who's a good man and a good friend, is very busy scheduled for the show in an upcoming show that hopefully this month. Can't promise a specific date. And continue, James.
You know, it just shows a pattern of contempt that our president has. I mean, my gosh, you know, even, and disrespect, you know, even today I caught a news article about, I guess there's a rage in France going on Twitter. Well, they're none too pleased with President Obama. You know, apparently this guy had shoved about 10 pieces of some kind of gum in his face and was just chomp, chomp, chomping away during the whole ceremony. And, you know, just looked, you know, utterly disrespectful. I mean, he is such a poor representative of our nation. You know, and it's just one thing after another, you know, you know, there's some other video when Berdahl's father was praising Allah there at the White House. You know, you had to watch it, but real quickly there was an unmistakable, very large smile come across Obama's face at the moment that he did that. The fact that Jeremiah Wright, the man who he's, you know, Obama claims he's gone to church, into his church for over 20 years, says he can't recall Obama ever converting from Islam to Christianity as he states he has, you would kind of think that the man that heads the church of somebody that's as high profile as Obama, well, they would remember something like that. But yet, you know, from his own mouth says he doesn't recall it ever happening, which kind of leads you to think that he hasn't. Now, of course, there's nothing in the Constitution that states a Muslim cannot be president. And, you know, like you, Dan, I've known Muslims. I worked with one recently at the Department of Corrections, and quite honestly, he's probably the most decent person that worked there. He was painfully honest, and I mean, what I mean by painfully honest is that you better not do anything crooked around him, or he's going to go tell on you because he didn't tolerate deceit. And, you know, 20 years ago, I bought a used Honda from an Iranian refugee in Oklahoma City. Best car I've ever owned. Guy was totally honest with me. And, you know, and so my, you know, my two experiences with Muslims here in the United States, at any rate, have not been negative. But then you look at, you know, things that are going on in the rest of the world, and you wonder, wow, I mean, you know, look at that row of heads they've just cut off sitting on the floor because they were infidels. And you know, I have read the Quran, and there's some frightening things in there if you're an infidel.
Well, you know, here's the thing.
I've got, you know,
regardless
I've got
of what the text,
you know,
may say.
One of my
go
best
ahead.
Friend's sisters, I mean, she's Muslim, and I've got, you know, a couple Muslim friends, and that's fine. And they, you know, they're definitely not like the folks who got traded for Berdahl. That's for certain. But the thing is not that, you know, Obama, in so much as, you know, has sympathies for just the, you know, the Islamic religion, is that does he have sympathies for what the terrorists have been doing in the United States and across the globe, for that matter? Go ahead, Dan.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We're talking about individuals who happen to believe something and a worldview that is stuck in the Dark Ages. Now, I say that because, there used to be a lot of killing going on in Christianity before the Inquisition started, before the Protestant Reformation. There were movements of Christians who would kill entire villages of wars that went on for over 100 years in Europe that were as bloody as anything you could ever imagine. And it was not a good thing, but the West grew out of that, and Islam has to grow out of that. Now, look, when somebody – you mentioned France – you look at France, you look at England, you look at Australia, you look at various places, Norway and Sweden, that have welcomed immigrants. And they've welcomed immigrants from all over, including the Muslim world. And instead of integrating, instead of becoming part of a national character, a melting pot, hell, every single one of my relatives, that my ancestors came here by around the year 1900 or later, some as late, the latest one was my grandmother from Poland in the mid to late 1920s. I think it was 1926. So we're talking about people who came here and decided to learn English and decided to become an American. They wanted to be an American. That's why they came here. Now, that isn't required. You look at the Amish people, for instance, and they do maintain separateness. And even though they speak English, they speak Pennsylvania Dutch, which is a form of German that's several hundred years old. And they don't watch TV, and they don't look at Twitter. And I got Twitter and Facebook. I'm on Skype. I'm on Blog Talk Radio right at the moment. They don't do these things. And that's their right, but they don't commit harm to other people inside or outside. And they do recognize the civil authority. So if there is something burned at an arson, if there is an accident that involves a buggy, if there's somebody who beats somebody else up or knifes them or hits them with a club or shoots them, they accept the civil authority to come in and adjudicate the matter. And this is fine. Nothing stops them having voluntary associations for their churches, for their schools. They can raise barns together. They can do their farming in a traditional manner. And if somebody wants to come to this country and they don't wish to be assimilated, personally, I don't know why you'd bother to come. I mean, that's the whole point of America, is becoming an American, just like all the other people who don't look like you or can't come from the same place as you, but who will now share everything we all had plus what you brought in. But if you come here and you still want to be separate, I can live with that. I can live with you having your own specific language, newspapers, and you can worship in any sort of way that you want. It doesn't bother me. But if you're going to start hurting other people and targeting other people and insisting you have rights that they don't have, I'll tell you what, you're going to get a fight. There's a group in the Poconos in Pennsylvania. This is near the New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania border, which is maybe 50 miles from here. And I know people, I work with people who live within eyeshot. They can see this place. It's in Sailorsburg, Pennsylvania. And it is a Muslim training camp that's being run and funded by a Turkish man who is a billionaire named Gül. His name is, it's not like a crazy, dead person ghoul. It's G-H-U-L, as English. And it's a traditional Turkish name, but that's his name. And he was so much of an Islamic radicalist that he was actually kicked out of Turkey. And he's here, and he has money, and this is fine. And he promotes some form of Islam, and I still don't have a problem with it, even though I don't agree with what he's doing. But he also has a training camp in Sailorsburg. They're armed. They patrol. There's definite militia-type training going on there. The militias I'm involved with, which are ecumenical across the board, there's white people, black people, Christians, Jews, atheists, tree huggers. Actually, I'm very sure a couple of gay people who are involved in this, and nobody cares. You know, we're Americans. We're interested in liberty and freedom. If you're willing to prepare for the worst, and preppers, basically, just in case, whether it's, a fire, a flood, a tornado, or some sort of civil problem, civil insurrection, God forbid, they're fine with the person next to them being an American and working for liberty. And we get grief. We get attention from authorities that is unwarranted. We get people bothering us, and in some cases our leaders have been interviewed by federal authorities just to make sure that we're not dangerous and they let us know they're keeping tabs. And yet they refuse to investigate this terrorist camp, and that's not the only one, and I'll call it that, and that's not the only one that exists. That's just the one that's close to me. There's maps that show where these places are at. They refuse to allow local law enforcement authorities to be involved. And they basically protect these enclaves of armed haters of America from the attention of the news media, the legitimate government, and the people who live in those neighborhoods. And the lady I work with, who lives literally, like I said, within 300 or 400 yards of the gate of this place, she and her family are trying. They can't sell their house. Nobody wants to buy it. And she really loves the area. It's where her folks are from. And she wants to get the heck out of there before something happens. She doesn't trust them one bit. And she's not a wild-eyed person. Matter of fact, I was talking politics at work because, you know, I talk politics all the time. And like many people, her eyes were rolling and she's like, oh, God, not again.
Mm-hmm.
Until I mentioned this and her eyes lit up and she started filling the rest of us in and said, yeah, he's absolutely right. And I have definite knowledge, firsthand knowledge of this. Folks, these things are not crazy conspiracy theories. We have people in our midst who are truly devoted to changing America into a Sharia law state, a place where you will have to abide by Sharia law, a place where if you do not adhere to their religion, you have to pay them, where if you don't adhere to their religion, anything you own can be seized and legally by them, where if they wish to enslave you, by the way, slavery ended in this country except in the sex trade a long time ago, and it ended even earlier in England. This is the modern world where we say slavery is not acceptable in any form, and we work to eradicate it wherever some evil person grabs someone else and starts making them do their will against their will. Well, in Muslim countries, not every one of them, but in many of them, slavery exists and is condoned by the authorities. It is an official policy. They keep it quiet. They don't want the news media to know. But there have been numerous instances of well-placed Saudi and other citizens of other countries who have come to America, to France, to other countries, and brought people with them that they basically held in bondage, and the people got word out or escaped, and there have been trials where people are being held for trial and accused of being slaveholders in the modern day. And because there's so much money among the leadership on the other side, like the Saudis, they buy their way out of it. And they try and keep the news reports down. But, folks, this is mainstream mm-hmm. news. If you look, you can find it pretty darn easily. And this is on major sites, not just Fox News. I mean, the New York Times has reported on this. You can't much more left than this.
Right. And go ahead, James, if you'd like to chime in on that. And also, we'll talk a little bit about if you think that him not reporting it to Congress, if you think that just gives even more ammunition to for his impeachment.
Well, I'll just jump right into that right there. The fact that, one, he signed the law, so he well knew what the contents of the law were. He wanted the mm-hmm. NDAA for the policies in it, such as indefinite detention of Americans. He didn't hesitate to sign it. He didn't veto it and have them come back with a better one that has more freedoms or anything like that. No, he signed it, in the stock version that allows any one of us to be locked up forever without charges. And, full well knowing the law as it exists, that he had to give Congress a 30-day notice before initiating any sort of trade from anybody from Guantanamo Bay, yet he still does it anyway and cites extenuating circumstances. I mean, I think the extenuating circumstances would quite simply be the fact that he's working with Taliban and they wanted their buddies back. And, that was the most expedient way to do it. And he has no respect for the rule of law in the, in the United States. He doesn't. It's his law. The law to Obama is whatever suits his whims. And it doesn't matter what we passed by Congress. Otherwise, he wouldn't have made his pen and phone comments that he'll do whatever he wants. Well, he used his pen and his phone to trade a low-level Taliban for 5 very dangerous Taliban. And now we're seeing the net result of his year of action and his use of his pen and phone, and he needs to be removed from office. The minimum penalty for what he did is a 10-year prison sentence up to life. And considering the danger of the people that he, you know, the danger level of the people that he released, I would have to say that life without parole is the very least they should give him. It's aiding and abetting an enemy of the United States, negotiating with a non-nation group, which, you know, he is not allowed to do that by law, but he does not care what the laws are.
Especially, yeah, and when Newt Gingrich pointed out on Crossfires, you know, I have an audio clip I'm going to play later. This isn't referring to that one. But, you know, he's saying, look, people are going to, you know, he firmly believes that people are going to die because of this exchange.
Well, absolutely they will. I mean, the people that we've released, or that he's released, I say we, that he released, will absolutely return to their killing ways. You know, they're saying that they're going to be held in a Qatar for a year. Right. You know, something will happen. And you know, they'll be released accidentally with technology
they have today, they don't have to leave the comfort of their own Qatar home, because all they can, you know, they can put out demands or whatever, or tell people what to do and guide folks. You know, they are just using, you know, telephone, internet, you know, whatever, so they can still, you know, be active and their terrorist dealings, and not even have to leave the country.
Well, sure, Al Capone ran the mafia from his prison cell. I mean, you know, back in the 40s, Al Capone's running the American mafia from a prison cell. So certainly they can do anything they need to do. Just give them a cell phone and it's game on. And, you know, of course, and once the year is up, things are going to get really, really nasty, because all of the plans that they have been working out while they were being held in Qatar will come to fruition. So here in about 365 days, I would expect that things are going to start getting very interesting all over the place.
I don't think they'll stay in Qatar, and the credible news reports, again, from mainstream sources, say that these five are walking around free men in Qatar. They are not under any sort of guard or strictures. They are not being held. There's not even house arrest. So Lord knows there is a Al-Qaeda presence on the Arabian Peninsula. That's what they call themselves. And it's in the mountains of Qatar. Qatar is pronounced Qatar in that particular dialect. A little respect for the people there. And they exist there. There's some serious, serious fighters there. And it's at a crossroads of the Middle East that has been a crossroads of trade and smuggling for literally thousands of years. It's right near the Horn of Africa, right between Asia and Middle East and Africa. And I'll tell you what, this is right, by the way, folks, near not far from Somalia, where the pirates are. There's a reason why there's that much lawlessness. The terrain and the seacoasts make it so that it's extremely difficult, even for a modern navy, if any of them had the will. Certainly ours don't, but the French have shown some backbone. If you can believe that, the French, and I love French people and their culture, but the French military, their navy, has shown more backbone under their leadership than the American navy, and that shames our leaders. I'm not saying it shames the navy or any sailor involved, certainly not any SEAL member, but our leaders, I'm not very pleased with them, and that goes to the Senate. You mentioned Lindsey Graham. It goes to people in Congress who are falling all over themselves to make bold statements and do nothing. Certainly the president, the State Department, you name it, folks. It's corrupt everywhere you look, whether it's corrupt in this regard or corrupt in that regard. We're fighting this corruption, and I think we're starting to actually stop them, which is a precursor to being able to turn the tide. We're holding them. It doesn't look like it, perhaps, to you, but from where I sit, with all the different contacts and groups, all the small grassroots local groups, like right here in my township, that are now fielding 20, 30, 40 people at a meeting who are now mastering the techniques of freedom of information requests and how to deal with the press and how to use the laws in the favor of the people. That's great that we're fighting this corruption. But let's face it, the people in your township or your town or your city, they're not trying to kill you. They are not trying to bomb you. They may want to tax you a whole lot more. I'm pretty sure they do. And they'd be happy to regulate you to death eventually. But they really, you know, they're not interested in seeing you in a prison or seeing you blown up or doing anything to your wife or kids. The people that were just released, the people that Obama has been helping with weapons in Syria, they want to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And as they say,
you know,
by their fruit shall ye know them. Go ahead.
I want to bring this up, and Cindy brings this to us from the chat. I don't know if she'll be able to call in tonight. She is in Texas now. I think she's got a family event going on over there. But she states in the chat, and it's good to see you, Cindy. Says, oh, there we go. And she gets some more. It says, according to Dinesh Tissal's film, Obama hates colonist nations, and he sees Muslim nations as fighters against colonialism. Therefore, he supports them, but no other religion or people have tried and succeeded to seize and colonize more land for so many centuries and so violently, repeatedly, and mercilessly, take innocent lives in order to do it.
That's a very good point. You know, people who accuse America of having an empire have a problem with the proof. Again, rhetoric is my stock and trade, but words don't really mean much unless they mirror reality. America has, in the past, done things that were for a business, for empire. We have invaded countries like Nicaragua on behalf of United Fruit. We have acted in, you know,
mm-hmm.
in Cuba. Unfortunately, it was against for a dictator and ended up with Castro, but in favor of the mob and, you know, business interests for gambling. Yeah, it's true. But 90%, 95% of all military actions, small and large, maybe more, that this country has ever undertaken have not resulted in our ownership of anything on that other place. We invaded Korea. We invaded Japan. We invaded Iraq. We invaded the entire continent of Europe. We invaded all these places. We invaded Grenada, that's a little place, and then we left. And if we left our presence there, we didn't tax them, we didn't regulate them, we didn't oppress them or put them in prison, we didn't assassinate them, and we not only didn't make money in some of these cases, although in some cases American businesses, especially the real big ones that are connected, did. Most of the time, we made them strong enough so that they made money and became our competitors. Germany, our enemy, is now a leader in all kinds of world economy things and a big competitor to the United States, but they're not trying to kill us. Japan is a big competitor. They copied us and
mm-hmm.
did a great job of doing it and then branched off into even more innovation than we were doing. And they're not trying to kill us.
Especially like in the 80s, right?
You bet. South Korea is, they send us those cars for cheap. They are a vibrant society full of all kinds of, you know, they have Buddhism, they have Christianity, they have all kinds of religions there. You go and look at I'd love to visit there. And it's a wonderful culture, okay? And they're not trying to kill us. And we're not making money off them unless it's an honest, fair trade. They're making money. They're getting control of their own economy because that's what we gave them. We sacrificed how many thousands of men? How much money did we give so that they would be free? And then we left. We have very little presence in Europe anymore, very little in military bases. Any United States entities over there are simply businesses that do business over there, just like they have businesses that do business over here. Volkswagen has a plant in Tennessee. They make Volkswagens here. and that's great. I have no problem with that. That's free enterprise, free trade. And they're not trying to kill us. These people over in those Middle East countries, the radical Muslims, the terrorists, they're proven killers, and they haven't repudiated it, and they won't stop. In Israel, and I know there's people who claim that Zionism's a horrible, horrible thing, and I'm not saying their government's that great, but let's put it this way, folks. They just put a prime minister, a former prime minister, in prison for corruption. You think we could do something like that here? I really would love to see it. And the Palestinians have refused to negotiate. Netanyahu, along with just about every Israeli leader since 1948, has said, if you will stop attacking us, we have peace. That's it. We're not going to attack you. If you stop attacking us, we have peace. If you want to build your economy, we're happy to be a trading partner. And Israel is a trading partner with all kinds of countries around the world for mutual benefit, where they make money and the other country makes money, and there's technology and culture transmitted and all kinds of great things. Not saying they're perfect. They're just as messed up as anybody else. But they're not trying to kill anybody. But the Palestinian Authority refuses. And they won't budge off that final thing, which is there can be no Israel. And what Iran says, which is the Shia Muslims, and what the Wahhabist Muslims who are in Saudi Arabia primarily, the Sunni Muslims, what they say is that America is the great Satan and we can't exist. They want to wipe us out. They're going to conquer by sword if they can. Those who will convert, they're happy to have as their subjects. Those who will not convert. Now, Islam was not any worse than Christianity, 800, 900 years ago. Really, in real terms, in terms of how many people they enslaved, murdered, oppressed, pretty bad on both sides. However, today, we're not doing that. They're still doing that.
And James, if you'd like to add anything into it, we've got almost to the top of the hour. So before we bring it, James, I want to just remind folks to check out two things. One, of course, the Patriot Journalist Network at www.patriotjournalist.com, and also the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, as well as the affiliate page where we have some affiliates on there, namely what we're promoting now is the Go Sun Stove, which is a solar cooker, which could cook some food there for about 20 minutes or so, depending on what you're cooking. There's also a video on the site that shows you how it works. So, of course, if you're out and about and you don't have any fuel with you, no charcoal, no wood, don't have to carry around a gas canister or anything of that nature, you could cook your food as long as it's a nice sunny day. And, of course, if you're out on the beach or at a picnic or down in Washington, D.C. during Operation American Spring, you're probably out and about on a sunny day, or if you're out camping or hiking, things of that nature. It's very portable. You can just actually carry it or carry it on your back or with your other packs, things of that nature. And the video will show that as well. So definitely check it out at BardsLogicPoliticalTalk.com. Check out the affiliate page, and be on the go with the Go Sun Solar Stove. Go ahead, James.
Well, it's just, I don't know, you look at this whole mess with, this is just like one more thing. And the fact that Congress has yet to act, I mean, I understand that Harry Reid is in control of the Senate, and Harry Reid will be just like any one of Hitler's henchmen. You know, they'll go down with the ship. And so we can understand that, you know, right now that impeachment is not an option because, you know, Obama's got a full collaborator in treason. And so, you know, we're going to have to, you know, wait until November, and we've got to get people out to vote and make sure that we take control of the Senate. To make that happen. But what they should be, what the House should be doing right now, and it should have been happening even before this trade, for Taliban light, for, you know, Taliban special forces, they should have a select committee rolling on every single one of the scandals and crimes of the Obama administration. I mean, every member of the House should be so busy in their select committees that they don't have time to do anything else. And that's what they're going to have to do. And a lot of people think that the impeachment will take a very long time. And the fact is that it really won't, if you think about it, because every other impeachment that's happened before, with Nixon and with Clinton, they took quite a long time. Because they waited until they began the impeachment proceedings to begin the select committees. Well, the House has done something a little bit different this time around with the Benghazi select committee, and that's that they started this select committee prior to impeachment proceedings. And so when they have the findings, when they have evidence and proof that there was wrongdoing, well, the select committees will be said and done, and the impeachment process in November, well, I guess it would be, January when they're sworn in, the impeachment process will be basically the icing on the cake. It'll be short and sweet and to the point, and just a final conclusion, the select committees that have already occurred. And so, no, the impeachment won't take until he's out of office in 2016. Will it be just one, another 2017 when he'll officially leave office? Will it be with just 2 years left in his term? Well, yes, but even if it were down to the last day that he were removed in office, it must be done to set the precedent for the next president and the president after that and the president after that, the president after that, because if we do not make a stern example, and I mean the sternest example allowable under law, of this president, regardless of any potential riots that may occur, and, of course, that's a legitimate threat, because let's face it, there are a lot of low-information people out there that still support him. And, will there be riots if he's removed from office under criminal charges? I really, if there weren't, I would be surprised. Coming from a corrections background, honestly, the people that would go out and riot in support of Obama demanding that he be put in office or saying it was a crime, honestly, anybody that would go out and riot in support of him probably needs to be in prison anyway.
Well, you're mentioning riots, and I cannot imagine them happening anywhere outside of some very large cities, and I don't think the rest of us really care that much about what happens there if they're messing themselves up. It's not going to scare us because they're not going to riot here in Schuylkill Township, in Schuylkill County. They're not going to. And as far as whether they will or not, this brings up the whole reason why. It's not because there are people who refuse to do their jobs. That's not the whole reason. Here in my township, this is a perfect, perfect analogy, and I'm working on some articles on it, for what happens in Washington and what happens on a world stage. You have people who get into power, and they're either already corrupt or they become corrupt. And they get to the point where they think that they deserve the power, and they own the power, it belongs to them, and everything the people have belongs to them, and that they can do what they want. And whether it's small corruption, like we probably have here, we're still trying to find out exactly what it is, or large corruption, it's people deciding on their own, these elites, that they're going to ignore the laws that they make you operate under, that they're going to, with a pen, with a phone, pick on the people they don't like and reward the people they do and screw everybody else, okay? So what's the first step? The first step is people realizing what's going on. Now, there's an awful lot of people out there who are despairing. Oh, my God, nothing's happening. Nothing's happening. But they don't realize that the very first thing that has to happen has happened already, and it's crucial. It's not only the first thing, it's the majority of what has to occur. Before any actions can change in a society, people have to realize that there's something wrong. Even the most unsophisticated person that I talk to, and I talk to people who really know their stuff or really know their stuff about one issue or really don't know their you-know-what from a bump on a log, but they all get it. They all get that the people we've trusted in power across the board have blown it, that they are no good, that they're corrupt, they're thieves, they're abusers, and everyone gets this. There's dissatisfaction. You have to have that first. The next thing that has to happen is what we're working really hard with these select committees, the subcommittees can do, which is we need the information out there. It's not enough to say, oh, they're all corrupt. We've got to be able to point to this specific person is corrupt because of this specific action, and we have proof. That's what we're doing here in my township. We're finding out what they're up to and making sure that everybody knows it. That then the last step, which is either an election result or a criminal proceeding or an impeachment or whatever it is, the next one's really easy. People are all aware. Now they know exactly who the target is, who's that person, what have they done, and the action's easy because people support it. Believe me, right now, if the American public said that any public official, whether it's a president, a Supreme Court justice, a senator, the richest man in the country, if we all stood up and said, that's it, that's an outrage, this person is absolutely horrendous because of this action they did, and they must go, there'd be action because the rest of the corrupt people know that they cannot possibly stand against us.
Mm-hmm.
If a billionaire happened to own a sports team and happened to be caught on video saying some really, really nasty racist things about an entire group of people just who happen to have a darker skin color, you know what happens? You think that that guy's money and connections are going to save him? Well, you know, he's not going to jail. That's not a crime. And he's not going to lose his money because he didn't commit fraud and steal money. He had an NBA team. But he's being forced to sell his team. He's out. Because people said,
right,
that's enough. We can't deal with you. You've got to go. And the other owners, who are no doubt, the professional sports is fairly crooked, in my opinion, just like every other organized aspect of our culture. But they know that if they don't want the whole league to be tainted, if they don't want it all to fall apart and all their carefully laid perks to just disappear and vanish, they've got to disassociate from that person. They've got to kick them out, and they've got to clean up their act to some extent. Look, folks,
mm-hmm.
Let's say that we take a majority in the House passed what we have, and I don't mean Republicans necessarily. I am thinking that's more likely as the party that's going to do some things, but not all of them are all that good. A lot of them aren't. But we get patriots in there. And let's say that we take back the Senate with patriots, people who believe in liberty, in the Constitution. Can we impeach Obama? Sure. Is that going to stop corruption? Absolutely not. It's not enough to take the fish that's rotted from the head. We've got to cut the cancer out across the board, not violently, because that brings chaos. We've got to get the information and get them out. You know, if they are guilty of crimes, if in your town or your township there's somebody who's stealing money from the taxpayers, you can prove it, they can go to jail, which means they're out. But if it isn't anything you can prove, you can at least vote them out.
And I'll have to catch up. Off it there, Dan, because someone who can actually speak, another person who could speak on that, I should say, is, of course, Kelly, and I do want to bring him in. So let's go ahead and open up the mic there. Thank you very much, Kelly, for coming to the show, and I know that's one of the things you worked on is getting these, rich folks or even politicians in front of a group that can put them away for the crimes that they've committed. So we can talk a little bit about that, but first, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I've just been listening quite a bit, working away on a design thing, and so my whole weekend project, but that's another story. A lot to cover here. So Muslims, Islams, at my church, there's some missionaries, and they say, hey, you know, they're pretty much peaceful people. They really are. They're people just like you and me. They put up a little hospital area and a school somewhere in, I think, Saudi Arabia, and they're just everyday people. You do have the radical fraction, if you will. Jim Horn wrote a brilliant book called Experiencing Islam. He came to the Tea Party here locally and kind of scared the bejeebies out of us all, because the Islams, and buddy's been saying this for years, Bruce, he's like, yeah, you know, we should just kill all the Muslims. Are you out of your mind? We have this thing called due process. I don't care if they're, you know, potentially dangerous. Because we've got due process. I mean, what if the law was now somebody going after Islam's Christians? Due process is extremely important. But he was trying to convince me how bad they are. And when I went and saw Mr. Horn give his presentation here, it was frightening. Muslims do, from his observation, they come into power slowly, nicely, peacefully. And then when they can, they start killing people. I mean, we've seen this worldwide. Very much like Hitler. He came into power and he couldn't kill people right away, but when he could, he did. Stalin came into power, couldn't kill people right away, but when he could, he did. Mao couldn't do it, but when he could, he did. You know, this constant problem here. Castro, he didn't for a while, but he could, and he did. So that's kind of the state of the human heart, if you will, with some people, and that kind of describes where some Islams, and I want to be gracious to those who are just trying to, you know, make a living and take care of their family, because I don't think they're the radical ones, but how do you tell friend from foe? You don't know. And we get into some of the tricks that Obama's been doing. We've got, let's just go ahead and assume some things here. Let's assume that he's doing treasonous acts, okay? You've got, you know, fast and furious. You've got that. That's a serious problem. An American died because of that. Okay, you've got Benghazi. That's a disaster. On the lighter things, you've got, you know, the IRS scandal. You've got other games being played. You've got the meddling with nations, and some are saying he was supporting the rebels in Syria. I mean, it's getting frightening what his real motives are, and he's not mm-hmm. at the point where he can, and he did, like Stalin, Hitler, Mao, blah, blah, blah. But the potential is getting very frightening. Now, if we want to talk about impeachment, you need a majority vote from the U.S. House of Representatives, and then he needs two-thirds from the Senate. And the crime has to be pretty egregious. Now, Nixon suffered these problems when he was spying on Americans in Watergate. It wasn't just Watergate, it was all over the country. So they found out, the grand juries there were several grand juries where the FBI was working gladly with the grand juries, and they indicted the famous Watergate 7 on March 5th, 1974. Before that, Nixon, everything's fine, you know, independent investigation. Everything's just honky-dory, no wrongdoing. And the indictment came out, and then it went to the House Judicial Committee, and they voted unanimous on a couple impeachments, proceedings, or causes, if you will, and several more. They didn't get unanimous, but they did get several majorities to the point where Nixon realized, I got to get out of here, I'm done. And that's because it was controlled under the Democratic House and Senate. Right now, we might have enough majority in the House to hold an impeachment hearing in the Senate, especially with the good work that Trey Gowdy is doing. He's doing his own investigation into Benghazi. You've heard about that. And finally, some Democrats are, you know, they're on the board, but they don't have the majority. So there's obviously an investigation in Benghazi alone. Oh, plus, you know, the killing of Americans overseas with drones, that's another little scandal there. And by the way, just we have a new judge in D.C. His name is David Barron. He wrote the legal memo justifying the killing of Americans overseas. He is now a judge in D.C., appointed by Obama. You see where this is all going? So let's suppose that we do have the numbers now for an impeachment by the U.S. House of Representatives. The numbers are not there for removal of office in the trial in the Senate. The numbers aren't there. Except November might change that. They're going to need, you know, we're about, what, 50-50? They're going to need in the Senate a number of Senate seats taken over by either independents, libertarians, and Republicans to have the two-thirds necessary. If they get in close, you know, two-thirds to 66%, let's say they're getting 58 to 60%, you might get some Democrats that will turn on Obama, and then an actual removal from office can happen. But right now, it's not there, and it hasn't been there for years, and that's why we're still seeing more scandal this, scandal that. There's probably stuff we don't even know about that's happened that somebody, you know, probably ended up dead being a whistleblower about. So there are a lot of things that have to happen in the Senate to successfully remove Obama. And one of the biggest problems we're having, and Trey Gowdy has been screaming about a grand jury investigation, hey, independent counsel, we need independent counsel. Why do we need independent counsel? Because who presents evidence to a grand jury? Oh, that would be an attorney from the Department of Justice. Who appoints him? Eric Holder. Who apparently appointed Eric Holder? Oh, Obama! Goodness! Isn't this interesting how this works? Yeah, this is kind of frightening because you got a fox who guards a hen house and no one's going to get anywhere near to investigate unless a grand jury understands their own power and they receive a petition, which are being blocked by Holder. So it's beyond fascinating, the power play and the vulnerabilities we have set up in this country through legislation. It was never, ever like this before. In 1870, there was no prosecutor in the grand jury room. After 1870, the Justice Department was born. It didn't even exist until 1870. And then the early 1900s, the prosecutor was allowed to prosecute the case for the grand jury. This is all fast backwards and messed up. And so when we need the system that was originally set up by the founders to take care of a president like this, we don't have it unless the House and the Senate get enough Republican or non-Democrat control. So we are in a really serious pickle. And if one of the problems with impeaching someone, like Andrew Jackson was impeached over the Trail of Tears and the atrocities he was doing, it was just and even the judges ordered, you will be kinder to the Indians. You know what Jackson said? He said, you go get your own army. I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing. So that's a challenge with impeaching someone, is that if it isn't followed through and they're removed by the Senate, then they only get more emboldened, more empowered to do even more junk, and it's frightening. So there's a whole bunch of factors here that is really going to be based on the fall election for the Senate.
I'd like to throw something in there real quick on the impeachment, if I could, Robert, and I'll be real quick.
Go ahead, because then I have another caller on the line who I'd like to bring in, because I think what you two guys are going to say is a really good setup with what he'll be talking about. So go ahead, Jim.
Well, just real quick, recently Harry Reid changed the rules of the Senate where things can be passed by a simple majority. Now, the question that I've had since that happened, does that include impeachment?
No. No, it's clearly in the Constitution. Majority in the House, two-thirds in the Senate, and then the Chief Justice presides over the trial. I mean, what's really happening here in the bigger sense of impeachment and removal is very much like when a person commits a street crime, if it's a felony, say a capital crime, you get indicted by a grand jury in many states, and that's what the House of Representatives does. Impeachment is a fancy word for indictment. And then as a street criminal, once you're indicted, you're arrested, blah, 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 and then you go to trial for your crime, and if you're sentenced, then you go to jail.
Obama will be tried by the Senate. They're parallel systems, just a little more fancy term, indictment versus impeachment.
So well, in one way, of course, well, when you're talking about, you know, the elections, and one thing that could be very helpful with getting the folks in office that we need to do in order to get these things passed, get more conservatives who would actually stand and impeach Obama, of course, based on the House and the Senate, is want to bring up on Monday for on the Patriot Journalist Network Red Meat on the website. Of course, that's www.patriotjournalist.com, is a Twitter rally on Monday evening, the 9th, from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And that is a tweet for Mr. Hubble, who is running for governor in South Dakota. And again, that's Monday. And whoever gets the background noise, we can limit that. I appreciate it. Monday from 9 to 11 Eastern Time. And, of course, to explain more about that and also to explain more about how those are featured, then we shall bring on, of course, the founder of the Patriot Journalist Network and our friend Mark Prasik, who we also interviewed a couple weeks ago. So for folks who'd like to hear more about the Patriot Journalist Network, definitely check out the website at www.patriotjournalist.com and also the show where we featured them 2 weeks ago that's in the archive. So without any further ado, we will bring on the founder of the Patriot Journalist Network, Mark Prasik. Thank you very much, Mark, for calling to the show. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. And, Robert, I want to thank you for participating frequently in our Red Meat events, which oftentimes are concurrent with your show. And I don't know how you do it, but I also want to thank you graciously for pointing out the out-of-date nature of the event that is posted on the site. That was last Monday. So.
Oh, my gosh. Was that last Monday? Did I read that wrong?
No. If you refresh the page, you know, it's it's fixed. But actually, it is
a
somewhat germane.
7 to 9. Okay, got it. Thank you.
Right. I'll get to that in a minute. But the I did want to follow up there, and it's great. It's really great to have constitutional experts like you have on your show, because I have known for some time, or I grew up under a mythology that I think a lot of people are still under, that, you know, impeaching the president is just the end of his career. No. No. It's a slap on the wrist. Removal from office ends his career, but impeaching him in and by itself does not really accomplish, well, it's just the first step of a process, but as was pointed out, there have been numerous impeachments of presidents who never were removed from office. Bill Clinton, I think, was impeached, but he never spent, you know, there was any. So good to have those constitutional points brought up in your show, because we need to understand our Constitution. But back in one of the things that we try to do, Robert, and I think you had a question about it, and I'll be glad to share with you and your listeners, because I think it's germane. There are people, there are groups out there, such as you have on your show, that you so well pointed out. There's a lot of passion and a lot of energy, but Patriot Journalist Network wants to provide a venue to push that passion and push that energy, you know, out into a wider realm of political activism. So our Red Meat events, for those of you that have participated, you've probably experienced that. One, we send out a heck of a lot of tweets, and I won't go into how all that's done, all the engineering behind that, but suffice it to say the handful of people that are in your chat room right now are fully capable of generating literally thousands of tweets in a two-hour period that will be echoed across Twitter in a big way. And we've been doing this since October of last year, and we've got a team of people that have gotten pretty darn good at it. So from time to time, we'll be approached with somebody who has a particular cause. Now, that cause has been in the past, helping get Martin Bashir fired, okay, for his comments concerning Sarah Palin. We've been approached by a group who wanted to cry out denouncing Phil Robertson's suspension from A&E, the Duck Dynasty show, for a period of time. But we also, from time to time, will have people who are trying to support a constitutional Tea Party candidate who really doesn't have access to the mainstream media, doesn't have access to the corporate coffers that oftentimes seem to dictate how an election turns out. But they have a good message. So they'll contact us and set up a special sponsored event for their candidate or for their cause. When that happens, they simply make a donation and a contribution to help pay for the actual facilities. And some of that money goes to just support Patriot Journalist Network in general. But with that, they have 2 hours, and if you've ever been to a Red Meat event, we have up to 25 featured tweets of actual people who actually tweeted something on a topic. We modify those tweets and condense them into a featured tweet that can be tweeted out from the Red Meat event. So, of course, they get to pretty much decide what those tweets are. Now, it's always subject to editorial discretion, and ultimately, you know, I've got the yield sign saying no, we ain't going there. But you know, I give them a great deal of latitude, and so we really lit up. In fact, let me pull up the statistics from last Monday night's event, if I can find it. And I'll actually give you in a moment, I'll give you a link to the very graph I'm looking at, because we do track this in real time. And we are, okay, what was Monday? That was the, was that the 1st of June? When was that? That was the 2nd of June.
Mark, while you're looking for that, let me just interject briefly.
June 2nd.
I use Mark's Patriot Journalist Network, and I am totally not a technical guy. I can't fathom most of this stuff. I just know how to use it. It's like most of you can't. Be a mechanic on your car. I can do that, but you drive it. So I'm driving this great sports car that he's made, which also works as an SUV, which also works as a convoy truck, and I'm putting out all these tweets automatically. And it's funny, but the one that seems to resonate more than any of the other ones, and there's like 500 on there that revolve around, is an article I wrote last fall for the Washington Times that is titled Radical Islam Threatens World War III. More than any other issue, America gets a visceral threat to its own existence. As I said, there are plenty of corrupt people out there who are in charge of various things, and they can mislead us, and they can steal our money, and they can nickel and dime us, and they can infringe on our personal liberties, but they're not trying to kill us. Everyone gets that these people blew up the World Trade Center. And you know what? If you have a different view, that's for a different program. I saw the planes. My brother-in-law was there that day as acting commissioner for the homeless who was living in Battery Park at a city house, who was on a run, which is why he wasn't in his office, who ran to the building collapse, who joined with Mayor Giuliani and the brother of one of the ladies I work with, a New York City cop, and was there that day. I rely on these people because I know them personally. They tell me the truth. I don't need theories about, micro implosions or anything. I saw the planes hit, and if any of you doubt that it was radical Islam with 19 Saudi terrorists putting a plane into a building because you say, well, you can't melt steel, look, folks, I've got a welding torch, and I'll get you a piece of rebar or quality angle iron, and I'll put a weight on the end of it. I'll put a three-foot piece, just 3 feet, and I'll put a 10-pound barbell weight on the end of it and just tack it there with a spot weld. And then I'm just going to heat it. I'm just going to heat in the middle until it gets straw color, and it's not nearly melted. It's not even halfway melted, and it's going to lose all its structural strength, and the thing's going to sag because it's got weight on it. That was Islam that did it, and we saw it. And since that time, even though the Bush administration and the Obama administration continue to say that they've kept us safe with all their crazy TSA and national security directives, there have been attack after attack after attack, not just in other countries, but here in America. And it's not workplace violence at Fort Hood when Major Nadal Hassan opened fire and yelled Allah Akbar. That was not workplace violence. And the Tsarnaev brothers in Boston, that was not some disgruntled young adolescent. These are, with the exception of the people who are whacked out, crazy people who are on mind-altering drugs, the biggest threat to our lives is radical Islam. And, Mark, that should have given you enough time to get back into the technical.
Oh, well, and well put, very articulate, Dan. You're not only a good writer, you're a good speaker. I put the link to the statistics that we keep on this hashtag, Red Meat, as well as many others. And if you want to go there, you can see that there, for each date, we have a number of Red Meat tweets, which we use to track the effectiveness. And if you go to June the 2nd, you'll see nearly 7,000 tweets went out. Now, keep in mind, most of those went out during a short period of time. You can actually click, and I encourage you to do that if you're there, click on that bar for June the 2nd, and it will take you to a new graph, which is an hour-by-hour distribution of those tweets. And you'll see that in the 2 hours of the special event, the first hour, there were nearly 2,000 tweets advocating the platform of that candidate who was a virtual unknown on Twitter. A virtual unknown on Twitter with like 200 followers. So I wanted to share that with you. Robert, you had a question about how do we decide. It's basically the sponsor of the event submits their suggestions, their nominations. And then I try to shorten them. And, yes, I do have the final editorial discretion to approve or disapprove, but I don't think I've ever disapproved of one. I've had to say I can't use them. They're too long. But it's a way for a handful of people to make an impression on Twitter. Now, many of you may not be what I call Twitter-centric, but let me say this. Robert, you and I have been through some incredibly difficult times getting grassroots people elected. I don't think we've got a single one that ever won.
Not yet.
But and I certainly don't want to lose anything, and I don't go into anything wanting to lose. I won't share my coaching stories on that because we're probably a little short on time tonight. But my point is this.
Oh, no, we got plenty of time here, bud.
When a candidate establishes a campaign, win or lose, that candidate is going to develop a platform of proclamation. They're going to get invited to events where they get to speak. In some cases, they'll be invited to debates. But they will establish a presence on Facebook and on Twitter and other whatever other outlets they can garner, and they will actually develop an audience. And we, of course, assist them in doing that. But here's my point. Conservatives seem to have a problem. And I've actually heard this, I knew it, but I heard it well put by a consultant who worked as chief of staff for numerous U.S. congressmen. And she said the following. Our problem is this. During the campaign cycle, we get very active. But at the end of the election, win, lose, or draw, we break camp and disappear until the next election cycle.
Mm-hmm.
But people, what I want to share with you is there is enough power in this chat room within the sound of our voices right now to make a substantial statement on Twitter, and we can build from that. We can't wait until the day before the election, which is exactly what this particular candidate's group did. Literally, the election was the next day, and they say, "Oh, Twitter, we need to do something." You know, bail us out. Well, you know, we don't do miracles. I told one candidate, we can set the sails to catch the wind, but I can't make the wind blow. Making the wind blow is a process. And when you see a successful football team, when you see a successful NASCAR driver, pick any success. That success came at the expense of years of detailed, grueling, consistent preparation. And I submit to you that if we were to take the power that is within this room right now and unify it and focus it on a consistent message or get behind you know, a particular leader, that win, lose, or draw, we can elevate that person, and because that person is really just a tool to proclaim a set of principles that we all share. And that's the point of what Red Meat does, and that's the point of what Patriot Journalist Network is about, is to reach out to other conservative organizations and groups, partner with them, empower them where we can, and work together. And I just challenge everybody to ask yourself, you know, how can we do this? You know, are you willing to make the sacrifice to do it? And Red Meat, by the way, heck of a sacrifice. It's actually a lot of fun. We've made a lot of friends there, and you will too. So I just wanted to interject that if there's a cause that you and or your group would like to pursue, we would like to partner with you, and we're all about that.
Definitely. I can
you know,
I've done
excellent.
That where I can, being on Red Meat, and it is fun, and you can really multitask. I mean, there's times, as you mentioned, Mark, that, you know, I've done, you know, some live shows and still able to participate in the Red Meat. So it's check it out, folks, at www.patriotjournalist.com, and definitely become a member. I think you'll find it very worthwhile, and you will find the link to the statistics that you were Mark was talking about on the Bard's Logic Political Talk page here on Facebook. And I did send a message with that link to someone we had on here recently, and that was a Jeff Jones. He is running for U.S. Senate there in Michigan, so I'll talk with him probably within the next couple of days about seeing what he can get set up, you know, and see what his interest is in doing something with that. I know he has a Twitter account that could probably use some help as well, and so we'll keep in contact with him and get from there.
You know, Mark and Robert, I want to bring this back from the technical. Well, actually, no. Before I bring it back from the technical, there are people out there who understand all this stuff that you guys are talking about. I'm supposed to be a smart guy, and I admit I have my limitations. If you're one of those people who gets this, here's what you need to do. You need to either join with Mark or start something similar or come up with your own innovation. Mark came up with something that nobody else offered, and it works to a treat, and it works cheap, and it works great, and it really makes a difference. It's a force multiplier. So if you're one of those technical people, God bless you. We need you. Now, if you're like I am, and your skills are in other areas, there's plenty of different tasks that are out there. Here's a tool that you can use. There are many different things that you can do. And, you know, I write and speak. It's great. I help people with ideas. If that's what you do, you can use these tools. We have people who I'm organizing with who are organizers. They're much better than I am at making sure all the details match and that everybody shows up and that there's a proper number of folding chairs and that we have permits and that, you know, there's water to drink and there's bathroom facilities. This is organizing stuff. That's crucial if you're going to have an event. And there's people who are very legalistic, and they make certain that every single T is crossed and the I's are dotted and we have absolutely no problems whatsoever. Some places you'll need to have security. You need people who are really peaceful and capable of being anything but. You know, whatever it is you've got to offer, we need to work together. I am so, so grateful to people like Robert who are able to put together this wonderful show with these great guests and this great panel as an outlet to help teach people what's going on. And I'm grateful to Mark, who has the ability to fathom this new technology in a way that nobody else seems to have grasped, and be able to do this on practically no budget and turn it into a major force for positive change towards restoring freedom in this country. So, you know, you really don't have any excuses, folks. If you can't do the one thing, you can do the other. And the thing you can't do, there's people doing who are more than willing to help you.
Dan, and Robert, I just put a link in the chat on something it's still actually underway, but to give you an idea about how teamwork can work, if you visit that link, you will find that we have done a campaign to bring back our Marine, and we're partnering with Congressman Steve Stockman. Now, let me take a little moment, a detour. Many of you may not know Twitter very well, so let me help you understand some things that you would only know if you've used Twitter for a while. Most members of Congress use for their Twitter what we call their handle. It'll say Rep. So-and-so, Rep. You know, so-and-so. But Congressman Stockman doesn't. His handle is Steve Works For You. Not exactly the most stately, you know, that just reeks of grassroots to me. It's not Stockman Works For You, not Rep. Stockman Works For You. No, Steve, you know, his first name.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to his Twitter profile page, they normally, their little picture for their profile, they're all the same. They're seated in front of an American flag with their little congressional lapel pin, you know. It's the same picture, all of them. Oh, no, not Stockman. No. It's just a picture of him in a suit, okay? And his background for his Twitter bio is not a picture of his congressional district. It's not a picture of the Capitol. Well, actually, it is a picture of the Capitol building. But dominating that whole thing is the Gadsden flag. This guy is not your typical congressman. He's somebody that you probably would like to get to know. But anyway, if you go to that page, because of the teamwork that's involved, we offered any member of Congress, I'll read it to you, members of Congress, regardless of party, show your support by tweeting the Bring Back Our Marine hashtag. The entire 2,000-plus member of the PJNet team will retweet you, blah, blah. And then, as they did it, we posted their tweets. We embedded their tweets on this page. Robert, are you on that page?
Let's see.
Or Dan?
Back there. Yes, I'm on there. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Actually, I'm multitasking and working on a Second Amendment rally and counter-rally in Delaware County coming up at the end of the month right now. So, yeah, you know what? This computer stuff is great. I don't understand a thing about it, but it works really nice. Keep talking.
Okay. Robert, how many, the first tweet by Congressman Stockman, how many retweets did it get?
It says Andrew Terramorsi.
Mm-hmm. Look below that.
Where Terramorsi continues.
No, the first one on the upper left corner, Stockman.
Stockman, that's got 3,281 retweets.
Okay, and then Congressman Salmon, the next one, how many did it get?
That one got 2,886.
Yeah, I could read these off the screen, but I don't want these figures to be suspect. I want a third party who has no interest in telling you anything but the truth. Congresswoman Wagner, how many?
Wagner, let's see. Let me scroll back up. Ann Wagner has 2,434.
Okay, and let's skip over to the middle one below, Congressman Meadows.
Okay. There's Meadows is 3,299.
And finally, Bentivoglio is, we just got him on board about 5 o'clock. Actually, it was at 2:30 this afternoon, so how many does he have?
550.
Okay, and he'll be getting one every minute until June the 8th. At about 11:30 in the morning. If you go look at the typical tweet from the typical congressman, it will get anywhere between 2 and 10 retweets. this is what teamwork does. We are able to not only partner with, we're able to persuade them to jump on board on conservative issues and tell them, we want to magnify your voice on this issue. Now, invariably, each one of these, somewhere down the line, voted the wrong way. Okay? But what we're saying is that if you will partner with us, we will magnify your voice in such a way on Twitter like it has never been before. None of them have ever been retweeted more than 100 times. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. Maybe there was one. But this is off the scales magnification of their conservative message. And I think it would be agreed we all as conservative activists need to make our voice heard. But I would add to that, it is Congress that passes law. We don't. So if you want something to change legislatively, we're going to have to find players on the field that have, yes, voted wrong in the past. They may have voted for stimulus. They may be wrong on another issue. But if we throw them all under the bus, we'll have nobody in Congress to work with. And I think that we're beginning to make some headway. That they're starting to understand that page out of the dog training manual that I took out, rewarded behavior tends to reoccur.
And James, I want to go ahead and bring you back in. You have your thoughts, and then Kelly, I want to have you come in after that. So go ahead, James, and of course we'll keep everybody on the line. James?
Well, I'd like to touch on something that you said as soon as you came on there about the Clinton impeachment. The difference between the Clinton impeachment and even actually you could even put the Nixon impeachment in there is the fact that they were never completed. Nixon was given the option to resign, which he took, and the Clinton impeachment was dropped because, I mean, let's face it, getting a blowjob in the White House isn't illegal. And pardon the language there,
you see, I don't know
Robert,
if it's boss
but,
logic
but,
after dark yet, but
no, but you know what? Perjury before a grand jury is illegal and would have put me in federal prison or you in federal prison. That's perjury, not the fact that he was a sleazoid who used his vast amounts of power as the most powerful guy in the Western world against a ingenue, a young 22-year-old intern in the White House. I don't care if she's over 18. He didn't make it with a woman who was an ambassador, a head of state, a multimillionaire, billionaire, head of a corporation. He made a famous world-renowned actress who, you know, of his own age group. No, he messed with a kid. Now, don't tell me that she wasn't a kid. She's an intern. He's the president. That was sleazy. Had he simply told the truth and said, I screwed up. Oh, that's after dark again. I messed up. I did something wrong. It's between my wife, myself, and this young lady who I was, wrong with. Had he said that, who would have had a problem with it other than the moral aspect? But he wagged his finger and said, I did not have sex with that woman. And then he said the same thing to a grand jury under oath. That's the problem with all these people. They take an oath and it doesn't mean anything to them. And in the Muslim world, there is, I don't know what it's called, Kelly probably does, or maybe James, but there is actually a tenet that says in order to increase the faithful, to help Islam, you're permitted to lie to the non-Islamic. And it seems like even whether that's an Islamic tenet or just a plain old corrupt tenet, that's what's going on here. Steve Stockman, so far as I know, has never lied to anybody, certainly not in any of the public stuff I've seen. And believe me, I vet as carefully as I can. If I found it, it would be extremely upsetting to me, and I wouldn't bury it. All these other people, they just take an oath. It means nothing. Folks, how many of you out there have taken an oath to do something? You've given your word. You've given your solemn word, whether it's a business contract or a marriage contract or the oath to support, uphold, and defend the Constitution of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic. You took that oath without reservation and without purpose of mental evasion, and it has no expiration date. And the only way to get out of an oath like that is to publicly repudiate it. You can't break a contract that you've given publicly, that you've sworn to, unless you tell everybody, I'm not doing this anymore, and then deal with whatever consequence that brings. These people don't care about their work.
Real quick, Dan, time flies when we're having fun, and fun we are having, is there's only about 9 minutes left of the live portion of the show. So what we're going to do is to tell folks that if you like to listen to the extended version, or sometimes we comically call it the Bard's Logic After Dark, which that doesn't mean that we go completely dark. That's just a little joke that we have. sometimes when things such as what James said slips out a little bit every great once in a while. But we do normally call it just the extended version if you like to listen to or be a part of the extended version of the show. Give us a call at 347-945-7428 and join our roundtable discussion. Be a part of the show and be heard. And if not, if it's kind of late there for you, we still appreciate you coming on to the show. And the archive will be available immediately after the show ends. You can listen to the parts that you're not able to be a part of live. But also, please share the link with folks who can hear more about our topic tonight, and then also, of course, about the Patriot Journalist Network and all the great information that Mark gave us for that. And, of course, check the Patriot Journalist Network out by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. At this time, Dan, go ahead and finish up, and then I want to bring Kelly into the conversation. Go ahead.
Robert, could I comment on the previous comments concerning telling the truth under oath?
Sure, certainly. Yeah, go ahead.
There's actually two layers of moral distress here. As was well pointed out, that it appears that our elected officials are quite willing to take an oath and then lie. But there's another side to that coin. Remember Marion Barry? Caught live smoking crack from an undercover agent that he had purchased. He was caught on film smoking crack. He candidly admitted it, apologized, and he has subsequently been reelected. That is a barometer of where we're at morally as a country. You know, in other words, we don't care what you do. Just be honest about it.
Yeah.
It's sad.
That's a very good point.
Sadly, we can't even get that out of our own president.
Oh, yeah, with the – well, I know, didn't he admit that he toked or something like that? But anyway, so go ahead, Dan. I didn't mean to cut you off, but
– Not at all.
Keep it up for the folks.
You know, 3 hours is just not enough in a program because it's not that all of us love to talk so much, except me, of course, you know, and everybody says it, and it's true. It's that there's so much to say, and there's so much to say that I don't mind a bit cutting my time, whatever that is, because I'm listening to the other guys and what they're saying. Folks, I do have a way with words, but whether you're listening to somebody who has a way with words or not, listen to what the message is. What are they saying? I have friends who are not nearly so articulate. It's just not their gift. They're good at other things. That's great. And sometimes they say, well, you know, you do the speaking. And I tell them, you know, once in a while, when somebody gets up and they speak in a halting manner that shows that they're really not that comfortable, and this isn't something they do, and it's not practiced, and it's not like they could lie to you if they tried hard, that this is real, and it's from their gut, and they're using real language, and you can see the emotion on their faces. That counts a lot more than somebody who's all polished and professional. You see these actors and these politicians on TV all the time saying this stuff, and you know, it's smooth and it's real convincing, and that's why they have their jobs. But is it real? Test them. If they happen to be articulate and they're telling the truth, that's fantastic. But if they're articulate like Obama is, he's pretty damn good with a teleprompter, and they're not telling the truth, or, hey, pick somebody from entertainment. Alec Baldwin is amazing with a script. If somebody else writes his words for him, he's a great actor. I really enjoy watching the movies he's in. I won't pay a dime to see anything new that he's in, but because I can't stand his personality or his politics, okay? When he speaks and he's not being scripted, he's still a very articulate fella, but the stuff that comes out is just filthy, nasty, and just plain wrong, okay? So that's what you want to look at, is what is the message, what is the content of what they're saying, and is it their words, or are they merely reading something that somebody else wrote for them and they have a particular talent? Don't be fooled. I keep telling people who say, listen, Dan, anything you tell me, I know it's true. No, you don't. I make mistakes. I'm telling you, and I'm not lying to you, but don't take my word for it. Don't take my word because, you know, James is really, really just a great convincer, and Mark has amazing amounts of technical knowledge, and Robert is just about the most sincere fella that you can hear on the radio. No ego, just really, just totally sincere. Don't take anyone's word for it. Don't just check out the politicians and say, oh, are they telling the truth? Is Dan Rather telling us the truth this time, or is he lying again? Check us out, because the more experience you have with somebody and knowing that their words match their deeds, that the words are actually true, and that it's their own words and they're not just reading somebody else's stuff, the more you'll know that you can trust them. And if any of us mess up, you've got to call us on it. I have made mistakes. They have been pointed out to me. It's very painful, but I make it a point to immediately, no matter what else I'm doing, publicly admit my mistake, tell what the actual truth is, whether I meant to say it or I just got it wrong, and ask people for forgiveness. You know, people will accept it if you make mistakes. But, folks, if you ever catch me in an out-and-out lie, I guess I'm done. And I should be, just like anyone should be. We're not three-year-olds here who think that the truth is whatever we want it to be. Any adult who tells you a willful lie on purpose, they better have a damn good reason for doing so. And even so, I wouldn't trust them ever again, not completely.
And I do see some new folks, and before I bring it over to you, Kelly, who has come in. And if you'd like to listen to the extended version of the show, you're going to have to do so, and that means call us within the next 2 minutes at 347-945-7428. That's 347-945-7428 within the next 2 minutes, or unfortunately you'll be dropped from the show, but of course you'd still be able to listen to the rest of it in the archive. So give us a call, and if you'd like to chime in, I do see some callers here on the switchboard, and if you'd like to become a part of the conversation, be part of the show, just push the 1 on your number dial to let me know you would like to get in, and of course I will bring in, and as you see here, once folks are in the show, and if they are polite to the guests and other speakers, of course we will keep your mic on and keep you in a part of our roundtable discussion. So I'm going to go ahead and bring the mic over to you, Kelly. So we want to get your thoughts on everything you heard so far.
Well, I really like your attractive invite to a roundtable discussion, and the only problem is, Robert, you've never given me a roundtable pizza. So
yeah,
where's
no
my
pizza?
Yeah, so we brought up the M word again.
3 hours or less, or it's free.
Yeah, there you go.
The
M word, Monica Lewinsky. Yes, Monica Lewinsky turned 50 recently, and so we brought her up, and here's a bit of history you guys, most people don't know, is that Clinton was actually censored by Congress. Yes. His penalty was, as an intern, he had to hire Elena Bobbitt.
Oh, Marina Bobbitt. You know what? His favorite song, you remember when he went on Arsenio Hall and he played the saxophone wearing those cool Ray-Ban shades? I'm not sure, but wasn't it Devil in a Blue Dress?
Ooh,
oh.
Interesting. Oh, boy. Wow. Wow.
Well,
interesting.
Okay, so back to the back to the top of the hand, back to
okay,
Obama.
We're going to get to the
ahead,
I want to read some specifics from the Constitution. And, this is a quickie. You know, when Clinton was president, they changed the, All Hail to the Chief song, you know, the official song of the president. They changed it to All in Hail to the Chief. All right.
Give that man a cigar.
Oh, my God. All in Hail to the Chief. All right. So, anyway. All right. Here we go with Article 1, which is the legislator. Section 2 and Section 3, jumping into what we were talking about with impeachment. In the Section 2 is the House of Representatives, the very last sentence. The House of Representatives shall choose their speaker and other officers and shall have the sole power of impeachment. In other words, the Senate can't impeach. But the Senate can try. Now we go into Section 3, the Senate, number 6, trial of impeachment. The Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. Again, separation of powers, like grand jury versus trial by jury. All right. The Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. When sitting for that purpose, they shall be on oath or affirmation. When the President of the United States is tried, that's the key word there, tried, the Chief Justice shall preside, and no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of two-thirds of the members present. And then we go into number 7. Now, this is where it gets interesting. Because Obama could actually go to jail, but not by the Senate. Number 7, judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal from office and disqualification to hold any and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. But the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to the law. So impeachment, boom, you're just done from office, and then you can be tried. And with trial, all right, when tried, removed, the presidential's protections that he has under the Constitution are hence removed. And in a regular court of law, he can be convicted and put in prison. So it's a fascinating the way they set this up. And one of the reasons why the president has so many immunities as president is because everybody and their brother who doesn't like a president, be it Reagan or George Washington or Clinton or whoever, his entire day might be consumed with fighting lawsuits and trials and defense and whatever. And so when we elect a president, we are electing someone who is virtually immune except for the House and the Senate. So it's a rather scary thing. When we vote for someone as president, it's very scary how much power and protection and lack of accountability. We have to vote for someone of character. And so, and by the way, I was called a name again on the show.
Well, what's that?
Oh, I was called a constitutional expert. Which I'm not. I'm a scholar.
Oh, yeah.
I want to be an expert. Yeah, I'd have to be spending days and or years and years and years. I'm getting brushed up on the history quickly, and then every bit of
the
Constitution.
Well, you're
the
expert on the show.
The
How about
law.
That?
The what?
I said you're the show's expert.
You're the expert
so,
on the show.
Yeah. All of us on the show.
Oh,
you're
on the show. Oh, okay. All right.
The Constitution on that one.
Well,
there you go.
Well,
Here's
all I'm trying to say, folks. It's not that hard. You just open up the Constitution, you read it. It's not that hard to do. And I'm sure people have done that, and I hope more people do.
Constitution. This one was actually printed for the Bicentennial. I was there when they moved the Liberty Bell, because I lived in Philly at the time, in 1976, to its from Constitution Hall to or Independence Hall to the its new little glass place that they had for a bunch of years. Now it's in the Constitution Center. However, this was printed up, and it's real cute, and it's real brief, and it's a little pamphlet. And this is with the index, and the index isn't even required. It's 45 little pages, if I skip to and leave out the declaration and all the rest of this, 34 pages with all the amendments. If you don't look at the Bill of Rights and the amendments, 20 pages. If you take off the cover page and the printing pages, we're talking about 17 pages, 17 short pages. These aren't 8.5 by 11 pages, folks. You don't have to know all of it. You can read just one, period, just one at a time. And they're really fairly clear. The Supreme Court does get into disputes about fine points of law, as it should, but unfortunately the Supreme Court has also decided that they can invent new laws because, you know, folks, they're people, and they mess up just as much as the rest of us, probably more. They're appointed for life, and I don't accept that the Supreme Court has supreme jurisdiction over the Constitution. That Constitution is real simple. I read it. I understand the basics of it. Kelly may understand even more of it. There are people out there who understand this, who are not geniuses, who are not, you know, with bachelors and juris doctors of law. You don't have to be one of the elites at Harvard or Yale to be able to comment or form an opinion about the Constitution. The things in there are really clear, and for most real-world events, you can say that is a constitutional thing for the government to do, or that is not. When it says in the Fourth Amendment, and let me just get the Fourth Amendment here. This is in the Bill of Rights. I'm not as quick as Kelly. But the Fourth Amendment is really clear.
And your persons, your property, and your effects.
Right.
Effects is a key word there.
The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. That means your body can't be searched with a blue glove. They can't go into your house. They can't look through your papers. And by the way, when they talk about papers today, that means your computer, your laptop, your cell phone. And your effects, which means just your stuff. Okay, against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue. And in other words, it says you need a warrant to begin with, but you can't have a warrant, but upon probable cause, which means there's a good reason to suspect, supported by oath or affirmation, which means somebody is putting their reputation on the line and saying, I think this is true because, and to a judge, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Here in Pennsylvania, just recently, our Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, hey, you know, we're just going to get in line with the federal government. And right now in Pennsylvania, our Supreme Court says, because the U.S. Supreme Court says, that